A couple of months ago, we made plans to, thank you, Mike. We made plans to emphasize the subject of marriage today. It was our intention to speak to the subject of marriage this morning and then host seminars this afternoon and this evening on that same subject. We had to change our plans regarding the seminars, but I decided to go ahead and begin really a series of sermons on marriage today. This is really more of an introduction to the subject, so it is not a sermon as such, I suppose. In fact, you will not hear the exposition of a text today, but rather what you're going to hear is something of a plea. Much of what I'm going to say today, I spoke in a message about 3 years ago, but I think it bears repeating as an introduction to this series. The scripture that I think incited is the right word, these comments, comes from Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4. Marriage should be honored by all. That statement is easily passed over when one is reading from Hebrews 13. But when you pause for a moment, you realize how significant the statement is. And frankly, with every passing year, certainly with every passing generation, the statement becomes even more significant. Marriage should be honored by all. The question is it? Poll after poll that were taken during the tenure of President Clinton indicated that even if it was true that former President Clinton had been unfaithful to his wife even repeatedly, Americans said it had no bearing on his performance as president. Many Americans see no incongruity at all when our government leaders on the one hand speak of strengthening families and on the other hand are carrying on extramarital affairs. I heard a man say, the American moral mind is in a coma. He went on to say, I won't say it's dead, but the American moral mind is seriously impaired. God says, honor marriage. But we live in a culture that increasingly dishonors it. And frankly, many in our churches have gone along with the culture. Now, I'm not suggesting that we ought to honor marriage just because it is marriage. The issue here is not to honor marriage because marriage is of some great eternal value. Instead, the issue is that marriage was designed by God to serve humanity, and if humanity honors marriage, then humanity will be served. The issue is that God designed marriage for us because God loves us. And when we collectively dishonor marriage, we do a disservice to ourselves. What I want to communicate today is that we must take marriage seriously and that we must begin to defend it as an institution worthy of preservation and honoring it in our culture, or we will all of us be losers. It matters that we honor marriage because much of what we need and even much of what we want comes from a culture that honors marriage. I'm not saying that individuals who remain single are disadvantaged. I am saying, however, that the whole culture is weaker and it is more vulnerable if we do not protect stable, lifelong marriages as the foundation of our society. I'd like to, in the next couple of moments, give you several signs that indicate the weakness of marriage in our culture, that is, the ways in which marriage is being weakened as a foundation in the culture. The first evidence of change in how our culture views marriage is in the number of adults who are living together without being married. In 1970, only 1 in 100 couples was living together without being married. By 1994, there was a sevenfold increase. It seems that in Colorado, the surveys tell us, 21% of adults have at some point lived in a cohabiting relationship outside of marriage. There is a growing percentage of adults that sees no good reason for entering into the covenant of marriage. The second evidence of a change in our attitude toward marriage and the culture is the rise in the percentage and number of illegitimate births each year. Back in the 1960s, and I can vaguely remember it, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who was most recently senator from the state of New York, did a study in which he concluded that unless something changed greatly and rapidly, the black family in America was in deep trouble. He reported that whereas in 1940, 17% of all black babies were born to single mothers, by 1963 that percentage had risen to 24%. I think I have read, I could not find the statistic, I think I have read that today it is approaching 50%. That rapid rise in illegitimacy has had a profound impact on the black family in America, as evidenced in community after community, and by the year 2001, today's illegitimacy rate, all races combined, is over 30%, and that does not count 1.5 million abortions each year, many by unmarried women. In 1970, only 12% of children were living in one-parent households. By 1994, it had risen to 27% of the children of America were living without the benefit of both parents present, and 4% with neither parent present. 37% of the children in single-parent homes were there because of divorce, and 36% of the children in single-parent homes were there because the parents had never married. There's a growing percentage of the population that sees no reason to be married to have children. A third evidence of the change in the America's attitude toward marriage is the number of divorces. The number of people currently divorced and not yet remarried quadrupled between 1970 and 1994. For every 100 marriages sanctioned in our state this year, 50 other marriages will be legally dissolved. One-fourth of Colorado's adults either are now or have at some time been divorced. There's been a stunning increase in the number of people who see divorce, in many cases, as an acceptable means to change a difficult marriage. What I'm saying is that by almost every indicator, our views on marriage and family have changed dramatically in the last 30 years. Young adults are marrying later than ever before, not only because they are getting more education, but because they are afraid of marriage, given what they have seen in their own homes in this culture. More and more couples are opting to live together rather than get married. A higher percentage of children are being born without married parents, and more children living in single-parent homes, and divorce has become commonplace. In the 1930s, when my grandmother divorced, it was literally the talk of the town. Probably the only person that most of those people knew who had ever been through a divorce. Yet today, there's hardly a family that is not touched by it. Are these changes bad? For nearly 20 years, many social scientists and psychologists tried to convince us that these changes were at worst neutral, and at best, they were in fact good for us. We were finally breaking free from our prudish Victorian past, and we were opening up whole new possibilities for the newly defined family. In the mid-1970s, I did a graduate program in marriage and family counseling at the University of Northern Illinois. In course after course that we took, we were reading from purported scholars criticizing the bondage of marriage, heralding the merits of no-fault divorce, and working overtime to minimize the negative effects of single parenting. And after 25 years, we are now reaping the outcome of that. And many of those same social scientists are now saying, we haven't seen the worst yet of what's going to happen. In the name of freedom of speech, we have turned our culture loose to glamorize sex outside of marriage. The advertising industry will spend billions of dollars each year using illicit sex to try to sell us something, while at the same time the free speechers will say to us that that sex, all the sex we are exposed to each day, has no effect on us. And here's the worst part of it. Christians will say the same thing. All of the advertising, all of that exposure has no effect on me, as if we were somehow miraculously the exception to the obvious. In the name of open-mindedness, we have said that living together without marriage is now acceptable. In the name of modernity, after all, it is the new millennium. We have taught our children how to avoid pregnancy and how to end pregnancy. But in our laziness, we have not put the kind of constraints on their behavior that would lessen the probability of illicit sexual behavior. In the name of tolerance, in the name of misinformed kind of love, we refuse to tell our friends they are wrong. Wrong. When they are seeking a divorce without biblical grounds. Even in the church, church discipline is now perceived as some kind of harsh, archaic throwback to an unforgiving, unloving, judgmental way of dealing with people. When nothing could be further from the truth. That's not what church discipline is about at all. And what have we gotten for all of these changes that have occurred, not only in the culture at large, but even in the subculture called evangelicalism? What we've gotten are broken hearts, broken homes, and broken lives. There isn't a week that goes by that I and others on staff and the elder board of this church don't hear from individuals, men and women and children, marrieds and singles alike, of the kind of pain that is caused by a culture that has changed so dramatically in the name of freedom. Freedom in marriage and family. But instead of looking at this more negatively, I want to turn it around and show you for a couple of moments how good marriage is for the well-being of people. What is absolutely amazing to me is the number of social scientists who are today beginning to speak of this very thing. That is, that the evidence is overwhelming that marriage matters. This week in the Rocky Mountain News, it was in the E section, this marriage is good for you in lots of ways, studies find. The book has finally been published. Some of you may have seen this article on Tuesday. It's called The Case for Marriage. It's some of the studies that were done in the preparation of this book that I used in the preparation of this message. Most of the authors won't say it this way, of course, but God says marriage should be honored by all, and for good reason. First of all, consider how much marriage matters for adults. It's striking when you read the literature to see how much healthier, both physically and emotionally, are the people in lifelong marriages in comparison to the rest of the adult population. Those who are divorced or separated are nearly twice as likely to be alcoholics. Those who are cohabiting are nearly four times as likely to be alcoholics as those who are in stable, lifelong marriages. Divorced people are three times as likely to commit suicide as married people. Married people live longer and are healthier. Linda Waite, one of the authors of this book from the University of Chicago, reported that research shows that on average, a married man with heart disease will live 4 years longer than an unmarried man with heart disease. Married cancer patients live longer. Married smokers live longer. Divorced men and women are 2 to 3 times more likely to die from any cause than are married men and women. Married men and women are 1/3 as likely to have emotional or psychological difficulties. Depression is 3 times as likely among the divorced, 4 times as likely among those who cohabit as among those who are married and have never been divorced. Married people consistently report they are happier than their unmarried counterparts. Stanton, whom I may have mentioned earlier, said, married workers are less likely to miss work. They are more productive on the job. They are more likely to stay employed for longer periods of time. And they are more likely to get along better with those they work with than their unmarried co-workers. This is not to suggest that individual single people cannot be healthy, adjusted, and productive. Obviously, they can. What it does suggest is that marriage should be honored by all because marriage is healthy. And a culture that honors marriage is a culture that will, in fact, be healthier and even happier, single and married. But marriage doesn't matter only for adults. It matters also for children. Back in the 1970s, they tried very hard to teach us that divorce does not affect children negatively. They tried to tell us that children in fatherless homes were not disadvantaged. They said Daniel Moynihan, whom I quoted earlier about black families, Daniel Moynihan was a racist for even suggesting that there were going to be negative outcomes from what was going on in the black community. But they were dead wrong, those who criticized. Divorce is devastating to children, and we must, as a culture, stop pretending otherwise. Certainly, we are not saying that children whose parents are divorced cannot lead healthy, productive lives. Again, of course they can, but let's stop pretending that they'll be better off if they're in a home of divorce. A person whose arms are cut off may be able to manage in life and manage well, but it will never be the same. Divorce does deep and permanent damage to children. Children who live with both parents are one half as likely to drop out of high school before graduating. And those who stay in school, their grade point averages are higher, they miss fewer days of school, and they are more likely to attend college. And of those who do attend college, those who come from two-parent homes are 20% more likely to finish college. Next, there's a significant advantage of children in two-parent homes when it comes to finding and keeping jobs. Next, study after study has demonstrated how much less likely children of two-parent homes are to be involved in delinquent behavior. Children of divorce are 70% more likely to have been expelled or suspended from school. A sociologist from the University of California, known by some of you as James Q. Wilson, wrote it this way: neighborhood standards may be set by mothers, but they are enforced by fathers, at least by adult males. Neighborhoods without fathers are neighborhoods without men able and willing to confront errant youth, to chase threatening gangs and reproach delinquent fathers. The absence of fathers deprives the community of those little platoons that informally but effectively control boys on the street. A two-parent family reduces by one half the chances that a daughter will be sexually active or bear a child while still in her teens. Girls in single-parent homes are 53% more likely to marry as teenagers, 111% more likely to bear children as teenagers, 164% more likely to have a child outside of marriage, and 92% more likely to divorce if they do marry. Lifelong marriages are what enable children to develop sexually in a healthy way. What about economics? I think all of us have seen the kinds of reports, for they're prolific, the kind of reports that indicate children are far better off economically in two-parent homes. Divorce and single parenting are the most significant factors related to children in poverty. A Harvard specialist said this: the vast majority of children who are raised entirely in a two-parent home will never be poor during their childhood. However, the vast majority of children who spend time in a single-parent home will experience poverty. Lifelong marriages enable children to live in economic security. Children in two-parent homes are more likely to be physically and emotionally healthy. For example, children in two-parent homes are less likely to die of SIDS. What the researchers have discovered is that infants in single-parent homes are 2.5 times as likely to die of sudden infant death syndrome. Lifelong marriages enable children to live healthier lives. And just as significant, remarriage after divorce does not help children. Many of our studies indicate that 62% of remarriages of women under the age of 40 end in divorce. And if there are children present in the marriage, the percentage of divorce is even higher. Love is not lovelier the second time around, at least not for the children. Mavis Hetherington of the University of Virginia studied 60 families who experienced divorce, and she watched them over a 10-year period of time. This is what she wrote: the earlier view of divorce as a short-lived crisis has given way to a more sober appraisal and rising concern that significant numbers of children suffer long-term effects from divorce, and that others experience submerged effects that may appear years later. What she found was that many women were reporting that they were much happier. They were experiencing greater levels of freedom. They felt better about themselves than in their previous marriage. But this is what Hetherington said in response: they gained their satisfaction at the expense of their children's well-being. Now, the point of all this is not that single people should not marry or remarry, but it simply is this: a culture must honor marriage. If it does so, then it's as if the entire water table rises. All children benefit when a culture honors marriage. We honor marriage because it matters for adults. We honor marriage because it matters for children. Our culture, including people who attend church, seem as if they're going the wrong way on this. By our lax attitudes towards sexuality, by the illegitimacy, by the ease of divorce, by the number of people willing to live together without marriage, we are in fact dishonoring marriage and bringing down a storm of social problems with it. We need to be outraged at what we've gotten ourselves into. It seems to me that we ought to be outraged at divorce and the problems that lead to it. We ought to be outraged at illegitimacy and the problems that lead to it. Not be angry at the victims, of divorce, victims of illegitimacy, but angry, very angry, at the real and deep damage that is being done to children and adults and to a society because we have not heeded God's word and we are dishonoring marriage. How can we be silent when an entire generation is in more pain than we can describe? How can we not be angry when we see what is going on around us in the lives of people? I think Glenn Stanton is correct when he says there are two things that we must do if we're going to bring back a strong marriage culture. First of all, we must teach personal commitment as a stronger value than personal satisfaction. That's huge. It is imperative that in our homes we teach personal commitment as a higher value than personal satisfaction. Why don't warnings about cigarettes keep kids from lighting up? Very simple. Because immediate personal gratification is a higher value than anything else. Why don't all of the warnings about diseases and unwanted pregnancies keep people from illicit sex? Because personal gratification is a higher value than anything else. We must become people who can and who will see beyond today. We must become people who see responsibility as a higher value than personal freedom and happiness. We must be people who see service to others as a greater good than getting simply for ourselves. How do we teach that? How do we get that message across to the people who observe our lives, especially to our own children? Do they see a level of commitment in our lives? Do they see a willingness to sacrifice? Do they see a commitment to a cause that is bigger than ourselves and bigger than our own happiness or comfort or pleasure? When they look at our lives, when they see how we live them, how we spend our money, how we make decisions, how we use our time, what are they learning about commitment? What are they learning about sacrifice in our lives? Who do they see is first in our lives? I can't tell you how sick I am of hearing, and I've heard it again within the last 30 days, I have to take care of me. I think I referenced this once before in the newspaper, a fellow named Neil Rosenthal speaking on the issue of intimacy. It's one of these write-in columns. Dear Neil, I've been dating this fellow for the past 9 months. We see each other over the weekend because he works and lives outside the city. My teenage son feels that my boyfriend shouldn't be sleeping over. I've told my son to wait for someone special before considering sexual intimacy. For my son's peace of mind, I figure it might be best if my boyfriend doesn't sleep over, but some of my friends have told me I'm entitled to a man's nurturing love. What's your opinion, Neil? Short answer from Neil. Make sure you take care of yourself and get your needs met. You'll have more to offer your son, not less, because you'll be happier and more fulfilled. That's the advice you hear around the water cooler. That's the advice you see in the newspapers and magazines and so forth, the talk shows. How incredibly misguided. I'm convinced that selfishness is the driving force leading up to most divorces. We must teach and model a different way of living, a way of sacrifice. But there's a second factor necessary to change the culture so that it begins to honor marriage. We must, and this one's tough, we must re-stigmatize certain behavior. As a culture, we made a decision a number of years ago that racism was wrong. We said it hurts people. We said it weakens the society. We said it eats away at what is good and what is desirable in a culture. And so we said that we would make it politically incorrect. We said we would make it socially unacceptable to tell the old jokes that we used to tell. It would be politically incorrect to make the snide kinds of comments that we used to make about people's cultural or ethnic or racial background. We changed the culture. I grant you it's not changed entirely, not by any means, but it's been changed. We stigmatize cigarette smoking in our culture. And by doing so, we have dramatically reduced the number of adults who smoke in the United States. And interestingly enough, the government, the ACLU notwithstanding, has been supportive of such stigmatizing of certain behaviors. We must wake up to the fact that there's a cancer eating away at our culture that is far more devastating and dangerous than racism and smoking. That cancer is the depreciation of marriage as a one-man, one-woman commitment of life wherein children can be raised in love and security. That's the cancer in the society. It is time to strongly censure parents who abandon their children. It's time to censure fathers who simply walk out. It is for good reason that it can be said the best thing you can do, Dad, for your kids is to love their mother. We must re-stigmatize premarital sex. It is not okay. It is doing damage to the culture because it is dishonoring marriage. It is time to re-stigmatize cohabitation, pregnancy outside of marriage, adultery, divorce. And people who engage in those kinds of activities ought to know that in this culture we value marriage so highly that there will be negative consequences for such actions. Well, please don't misunderstand. We must absolutely treat with grace and love those who are truly repentant. But while we exercise that kind of love and while we administer that kind of grace, we must also be able to say to folks, some things are just wrong. They're wrong for you and they're wrong for the culture. We must change our standards of television and movie viewing. We must care enough for our younger children and teenagers that we place limits on their social lives. Expect and inspect their behavior. Guard them as if their lives depended on it, because their lives do depend upon it. As their father, my highest goal for my children was not their happiness. As a pastor, my highest goal for us as a congregation is not our happiness. I want most of us for us to be good. I want most of all for us to be and do what is right, because I think that out of that goodness, by God's grace, out of responsibility and commitment and sacrifice, will come not only happiness, but will come a life worth living. Jesus said, as Christians, we are to be light in this culture. We are to show the way to a better way of life. We are the ones in the culture that God is asking to show the rest of the world how it's possible to honor marriage. How do we do that? Are we truly any different than the rest of the culture? Are you married? Will you invest in that marriage to make it healthier? Do you know a couple that are struggling, or a couple that is struggling with their marriage? What will you do to invest in them? How will you honor marriage by your investment in their lives? Is your own marriage in trouble? Will you take the focus off of yourself and the "I have to watch out for me" and once again turn it toward your spouse and what God commanded when he said, "Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her"? We can help change the culture. We must change the culture. Our lives and the lives of our children depend on it. Pray with me, please.